107.5 FM, W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News, the Biden News Conference. I'm Dave Packer. At his first press conference since the self-admittedly poor debate performance against Donald Trump, President Biden tonight saying he will take a neurological test if doctors tell him to.
I am not opposed. If my doctors tell me I should have another neurological exam, I'll do it.
At one point, the president calling his running mate Vice President Trump. This as pressure mounts from fellow Democrats to leave the presidential race, where 17 House members and one senator are now calling for Biden to step down. ABC's Rachel Scott.
Yet another Democrat, Congressman Jim Himes, has come out calling for the president to step aside tonight. Democrats telling me that they groaned and cringed when the president said Vice President Trump instead of Vice President Harris. But every Democrat that I talked to said they cannot believe they're in this scenario where the president's defending his age with 4 months to go.
President Biden back on the road tomorrow for a campaign event in Michigan. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Civic Media is reviewing procedures after an edited version of an interview between talk show host Earl Ingram and President Biden aired last week. CEO Sage Weil tells Todd Albaugh the choice made in the moment won't happen again.
This was a first for us. This is our first presidential interview and the first time we've had these types of requests. And unfortunately, the judgment in the moment was not ideal. And so my job is to make sure that we prevent these types of mistakes going forward.
Ingram will stay on as host. Weil calls Ingram an invaluable voice for Milwaukee and Wisconsin. Wisconsin's Democratic Secretary of State is settling an open records lawsuit. Sarah Godlewski was appointed the same day Doug La Follette resigned last year. Republicans are looking for evidence of a prior agreement. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today. Oh, the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Got an interesting guest pitch recently. And look, I get guest pitches from all across the political spectrum, right, left, center, crazy, you name it, I get it. You've been doing this as long as I have. You tend to be on a lot of mailing lists and people throwing their ideas out. Hey, we want to get our guests out to talk about our very important issues. And I got one from the, I was shocked by it. I was stopped in my tracks going, what? They have reached out to me? Do they not know? The Center for Union Facts sent me a guest pitch because evidently they're going to be putting up some billboards around the RNC convention in Milwaukee that I think they thought I would be interested in. And what they are, and maybe it's that they know that I have a problem with Sean O'Brien playing footsie with Donald Trump. Maybe they knew that as a 35-year Teamster member, I had a little bit of a problem with Teamster President Sean O'Brien, you know, making the pilgrimage down to Mar-a-Lago, and then, you know, holding the press conference in our hall, and giving Trump the ability to do his little song and dance in front of thunder and lightning. Maybe that was it. And then, well, there have been some things along the way. But, you know, that happens. So when I saw this guest pitch, because I got to assume that's what their thinking was, of this billboard that is a picture of Sean O'Brien with the line of, you know, two-faced Teamsters, question mark, with the underline 99% of dues spent on political advocacy went to the left. For more information, go to unionfacts.com. And so I'm like, wait a second. How could an organization that says that they're the facts, you know, the union facts, the place where I'm supposed to get truth and honesty from, how can it be that they've lied right to me in their billboard? 99% of dues dollars spent on political advocacy went to the left? 99%? Outside that number, I don't know what orifice they pulled it out of, but here's what I do know. Here is the fact. So maybe the Center for Union Facts needs some union facts, and they came to the right person. Here I am. You cannot spend dues dollars on political advocacy. You can't do it. The Teamsters has this fund. It's the DRIVE Pact. It stands for Democrat, Republican, Independent Voter Education. It was started by Jimmy Hoffa back in the 60s. I've donated it a good portion of the 35 years that I've been there. So when money is spent on politics, it's the donations that I make to DRIVE and that, you know, hundreds of thousands of other Teamster members make to this DRIVE fund. That's what goes to political activities. No dues dollars. So right from the start, you've lost me by lying. You've lost me with misinformation. Now, I wanted to have them on because I said immediately, oh, yes, please. I would love to have you, Center for Union Facts, come sit down with me and explain to me this magical number and which orifice you doth pulled it out of. I also want to know who's paying for the signs. Who's paying for the billboards? Who pays your salary? Oh, we don't know. You're private. So we don't know the front group funding that you're getting. We don't know if it's the beverage folks or the NFIB or we have no idea. Or if it's billionaires just handing you cash. What I can tell you it's not are actual working people. So I was surprised that they would do this. And also very surprised that, let's say it were true, just hypothetically, and we know that it's not. Because one, it's impossible because it would be illegal to have any dues dollars going to it. And two, 99% is a, come on. You should have just gone with 100. Why would they be against O'Brien going to the RNC? If that's true, if that 99% number is true, wouldn't this overture of going to speak to the faithful of the RNC be an opportunity for them to win some of those dollars? Wouldn't that make some sense? And the answer is no. Because for them, it's not that at all. Because they understand what the game is. The game is red hat, blue hat. And we're supposed to play that. But for them, it's all about the money. They know none of those people in the hall are going to buy whatever's being said. They know what... They know. They know why O'Brien's there. And understand, this kind of treatment is what you get when you sell out to these people. This is what they do. You know, the reality is Sean O'Brien is going to be their whipping boy. They are going to use him and my Teamsters Union as their hood ornament as they drive their anti-union policy truck right over the top of working people. And the reality is Sean O'Brien is going to be their dancing show pony whether he wants to be or not. And they're going to ride him until election day. Because what they understand, what Trump understands, what the RNC gets by giving him this platform is a lot of his members vote for Republicans. This is making it okay. This is going, yeah, don't worry about your job. Don't worry about any of that stuff. It's okay. It's fine. Because here's the thing. Regardless of what his message is, it's only going to normalize and make the anti-union party, the most anti-union party and president that we've ever known, seem normal. Like this is any other time. It's like any other election. So, you know, as I think of O'Brien going to the RNC and doing his song and dance, you know, I got to go. What's the message? What's he going to say? And, you know, immediately my mind went to, what do you say to your executioner? When you walk up to the gallows, what do you say to that person who pulls the hood off your head? Do you beg and plead? Do you surrender? Do you put up a fight? I'm waiting to see. Because here's the thing. Does he believe, does President O'Brien believe that the GOP is just going to, well, they just don't understand. And he's going to say some words that will change their hearts. You know, I heard President O'Brien say that Josh Hawley, who he gave drive money to, didn't know what right-to-work laws were. I find that impossible to believe that a U.S. senator doesn't know what the right-to-work laws are, especially in a state that's been fighting right-to-work for a very long time. And my mind goes, you know, does President O'Brien think that his presence is going to change the proverbial Grinch's heart to magically support the expansion of rights for all working people? Yes, we have seen the errors in our way, and we now support collective bargaining because we understand that, you know, a strong workforce where workers share in the prosperity of the company and have some job security, that's the way to build an economy. Do you think that's going to happen? Especially since, I don't know if you've been paying attention to what our Supreme Court is doing. You know, the Republican-installed Supreme Court, hell-bent on returning work in America to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s. We've talked about on this program how they want to revive the Lochner era and make poverty wages and desperate work great again. Somehow is a speech that President O'Brien is going to give, is that going to change any of that? Is that going to bring them to our side? Is that going to say, no, we've been wrong? Is he going to push back against privatization schemes of our commons? You know, like our public services, like our public schools. Will we hear anything about that? And will that change their hearts and minds? Will this olive branch bring them to our side, or at least to the middle? Really? Is he going to question the people who brought us Janus? You know, I have a union friend who regaled me in long discussions about how hard life is in the public sector because of Janus, telling me that he's never voting for that Joe Biden. Going to vote for the other guy. Is he going to question the end of the Chevron doctrine, which is certainly going to affect unions? It's going to affect administrative agencies like OSHA. You know, you heard Jordan Barab on this program not too long ago talk about what the end of the Chevron doctrine is going to mean to safe working conditions, to health and safety on the job. It's certainly going to hurt the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. You know, those people who, both groups, who are there to protect workers' rights and to protect their health and safety, you know, those folks. Or, I guess, maybe he's going to rub elbows with the people who want to dismantle the NLRB. You know, because Elon, over at Tesla, or SpaceX, actually, is what it was, and Bezos over at Amazon, which I'm guessing he still wants to organize, and Trader Joe's, which should be organized, they all want to do away with parts of the NLRB. Maybe he'll take a selfie with them, like he did with Dana White, who broke a union campaign years ago when the Teamsters and the culinary workers tried to organize the MMA fighters. Or is he going to talk about how the Supreme Court, that decision in Glacier Northwest versus the Teamsters, will subject unions to frivolous lawsuits and potentially costly restitution and fines? Can you hear anything about that? Probably not. Because understand, he's going to be standing in front of a crowd of people who understand why he's there. He's to legitimize their existence to working people in this country. Understand, these are the people who hate workers, especially union workers. And look, in normal times, I could justify going and talking with Republicans and trying to find common ground. I've done it for years. These not normal times. Sorry, not going there. You can't normalize a Donald Trump. You can't normalize a party that wants to, that is running on a platform of firing all those federal workers and replacing them with good loyalists, making patronage great again. Sorry, I'm not buying. What we know is the GOP wants to destroy our America by repealing the 20th century and turning back the clock. Not just on unions, but on all the progress that our grandparents and great-grandparents fought for. Normalizing this party puts you on the wrong side of history. And I take no joy in this. Look, I love my Teamsters Union. It's done great things for me, and it does great things for working people. But this, another mistake. I supported you, Sean O'Brien. I want you to do well. I want you to succeed. I want you to organize and fight for the best contracts possible. But this is a mistake. On this, you're on the wrong side of history. I want to hear your thoughts. Are there Teamsters out there who agree or disagree? I want to hear your thoughts. Maybe we'll take a poll and find out. But as far as I'm concerned, this Teamster thinks it's a mistake. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it's been an interesting couple of days as it's sad to see that the Democratic Party is literally tearing itself apart over the call for President Biden to step aside. And look, I understand, and we talked about this the other day. I understand if you're on the, Biden's got to stay no matter what. Don't care if he's in a coma, I'm voting for him. And understand, in November, if he's on the ballot, he's the guy I'm voting for. I've said this from day one. I started in the position of going, hey, look, I think Joe Biden's going to do what's in the best interest of our country. I believe he's a good and decent, honest man. I believe he's thoughtful. And I think there's a moment where you just have to go, can he do it or not? As I said yesterday on the program, we'll see. Give him some time to get out there and, as I put it yesterday, get his Irish up. We'll see. But I do find it interesting that the parties are eating each other, especially the folks who are saying that calling on him to resign is, I think, what was it, bedwetting pants wetting and, a whole bunch of, clutching at pearls. Wish I had pearls. I find it interesting that that's the battle instead of what we saw. And look, the attack on George Clooney, which I think is hysterical because Clooney's a guy who's been a lifelong Democrat. He's been at all of the fundraisers. He's done all of the things that you could want from one of the stars in Hollywood. Doesn't get involved in too much unless you ask him to. But he wrote an op-ed over the New York Times. And it was exactly, I got to be honest, it was exactly what I've said. I love Joe Biden. I loved him as a senator, loved him as a vice president, as a president. He says, I consider him a friend and I believe in him, believe in his character, believe in his morals. In the last 4 years, he's won many of the battles he faced. But the one battle he cannot win is the fight against time. None of us can. It's devastating to say it, but the Joe Biden I was with 3 weeks ago at the fundraiser was not the Joe effing big deal, Biden of 2010. He wasn't even the Joe Biden of 2020. He was the same man we all witnessed at the debate. He said, look, you know, was he tired? Yes. A cold? Maybe. But our party leaders need to stop telling us that 51 million people didn't see what we just saw. We're also terrified by the prospect of a second Trump term that we've opted to ignore every warning sign. That is exactly what we've been saying here. And it's exactly what I believe, that Joe will do what's in the best interest of the country. But for the party to eat itself, this could be a unifying moment. This could be a moment where, if he does get out there and he does better, maybe it pulls the party together. He fights and he holds on. Maybe. But I'm looking at the polls. Initially, I said, well, there wasn't really any drop. Things are bad. And I don't like that, because this guy has been the best president for working people in my lifetime. This guy has done virtually all of the things that I've been asking for almost two decades doing this show. So to be on the side of, I think he needs to step down, is a struggle for me. But again, I come back to, on this side of the aisle, we do what's best for the country, not what's best for an individual. And look, everybody should be calling for Donald Trump to step aside, not because he's too old. He's getting up there, does a lot of things that you go, I think Jon Stewart did a great bit on this. What did you just say? Does an awful lot of really bizarre stuff. Not to mention 34 felonies, not to mention, you know, the grabber by the you-know-what, all the other stuff that we know about. Tons of allegations of immorality, impropriety. Someone who views the Ten Commandments, I believe, as a checklist. There's someone who should be resigning. There's someone, to be quite honest, shouldn't even be in a position to have to resign. And what does it say about us as voters? What does it say about us as a country that person's even remotely palatable? What does it say about, well, the Republicans right now, who talk about family values, who talk about their religiosity, who talk about we're a Christian nation, who talk about family, and go down the list, personal responsibility, and yeah, small, less intrusive government, while they're trying to weaponize government. What does it say about them that this is their nominee? You know, so when people reach out to me and go, well, why aren't you calling for him to step aside? Because it's an exercise in futility. Because the people that support him for all the reasons that you think should disqualify him. So this race is about much more than just two old guys. This race is about the decency, the dignity, the hope for a future, the humanity in this country. Who are we? What are we telling the rest of the world when half of the country is saying that we're behind Donald Trump? Unapologetically. In fact, wearing it on our shirts and on our hats and flying flags in front of our homes with profanity and ignorance on display. What does that say? In a place where we've got real problems. You know, just the other day, I saw House Speaker Mike Johnson. He spoke at the Hudson Institute. And he was talking about, again, the agenda, the stuff we're not talking about. while we're talking about, is Joe Biden too old? Or we're talking about, hey, you know, Donald Trump wears a diaper. You know, so he's literally dumping. The important stuff, that doesn't seem to get us anywhere. But what he said at the Hudson Institute was something along the lines of, we're going to go and cut Social Security. We're going to go and cut those entitlement programs. We're going to go slash and burn that stuff so that we can increase the military budget. Now, understand, I think we spend more on military than like the top, I don't know, 20 countries combined. We account for, you know, almost half of all military spending on this planet. We could literally end homelessness. We could end hunger. We could do all kinds of stuff. But we've chosen to spend it on the military. Now, am I anti-military? No. I'm in favor of having a big, muscular military that you put over there behind glass when in case of emergency, break here. I agree with Teddy Roosevelt. Walk softly, carry a big stick. I agree with that because I think there's a deterrent to it. But to say that we're going to slash Granny's Social Security, or more likely my Social Security and my generation and future generations' opportunity to retire so that we can continue to feed this monster, kind of a problem. Especially when you're talking about a time, and again, you can't make this stuff up, where you've got a Boeing CEO who's stepping aside. The company that went and agreed to plead guilty, you know, as long as it's just fines, you know, we're not going to put the CEO in jail. Of course not. You know, to the tune of billions of dollars. So, you think about what happens to Granny's Social Security and Grandpa's, you know, pension. You know, it used to be you work 40 years, you got a gold watch, and you got a defined benefit pension. I don't think they're giving out the gold watch. I don't even think you get a card anymore. But what you do have is you got a Boeing CEO who basically ran that company right into the ground. Not to mention a couple of planes that killed, 340 some odd people. He gets to walk away with a golden parachute of some, $45 million? And of course, going to be taxed at a lower rate thanks to Donald J. Trump. So for me, I look at this place that we're in, and we're having, one, all of the wrong conversations. We're not talking about how we're going to make lives better and futures better for our children and our grandchildren and creating a better future for humanity. No, we're not talking about that at all. We're talking about an old guy who sadly is diminishing, and a guy who lies repeatedly and wears a diaper. When do we get to the stuff that makes lives better? And this is why, again, I think people are frustrated, they're angry, because they don't see their government doing the work for them. We've been fed this red hat, blue hat stuff. We got to be in our teams and we got to fight each other and all of that. And it's, look, understand, it's the elites doing this. It's us. It's we, the working people. We're the ones who have to talk to each other in the workplace. We're the ones who have to talk to each other in the churches. We're the ones who have to talk to each other in our social interactions. And then find a way to find that common ground that we agree on. Because, you know, I go back to this and I still believe it, that we agree on more than we disagree on. You know, sometimes we're fed these crises. You know, someone's going to the wrong bathroom. Someone's marrying someone else. And then that's what we're fixed on. We're fed a constant diet of it. The outrage machine of our mainstream corporate-controlled right-wing media is amazingly powerful, because they know what divides, what angers, that's what sells. That's what gets your juices flowing. Not talking about, hey, you know, the job I do now for a living. You know, you go back to the 80s when I started. Had it just kept up with inflation, the wages I was making back then, I'd be making about $15 to $18 an hour more. Where's that money? Where did it go? And that's just not me. That's across the entire workforce. So you wonder why you're struggling to put food on the table? It's because your wages haven't kept up. If you're wondering why you're struggling to pay the rent and keep clothes on the kids' backs and do all that, it's because your wages have not kept up. And why? Well, we've got a Republican Party hell-bent on destroying workers' rights and a Democratic Party that, to be fair, was not always the greatest ally until Joe Biden. And I stand by Joe. I know he'll do the right thing, but more importantly, I stand by the people that he put it in with him. I stand by this Democratic Party now. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear for tonight and pleasant with lows in the low 60s. Sunny and mild again tomorrow with highs in the mid 80s. Near 90 for the weekend, isolated storms, some could be strong. Staying warm into Monday with a few storms, then cooler for the rest of next week. It's 71 right now.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk.
Our guest, Jonathan Gurko. Deliberative dialogue in democracy isn't winning an argument.
Instead of how do we win and end the conversation, how do we keep it going? How do I listen in a way on the assumption that someone else has something that I can learn from that will improve my point of view so that we can grow? To me, that's the democratic project.
Busted Pencils with Dr. Tim and Dr. Johnny. Weeknights at 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Wednesday, the House of Representatives actually passed something. The Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or the SAFE Act. Or SAVE Act. SAVE. I don't know what they're saving, but it passed by a vote of 221 to 198. You've got 216 Republicans, 5 Democrats who voted for it. Henry Kuhlhauer, the guy from Texas, Don Davis from North Carolina, Jared Golden from Maine, Vincent Gonzalez Jr. from Texas, Maria Glusenkamp Perez from Washington. What's interesting about this is the Brennan Center actually did some research on this back in 2017. And what they found out of like 24 million votes that they examined, there were 30 that were suspected of being non-citizens voting. None proved, but 30 that they suspected could have been. So you're looking at like a 0.00001. Is this worth Congress's time? And isn't it already illegal? And here to share some thoughts on this, the guy who actually helped write the Help America Vote Act that already made this illegal, our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for making time for us.
Thanks, Rick. I was going to give you you blew the punchline. I was going to give you a trivia test and show how schooled you are on all this, okay?
Hit me.
Well, the trivia test was, what two members, actually quite good-looking intelligent members, in 2002 passed the Felony Attestation Act. One's Democrat, he's still there. One's Republican, who does radio.
So obviously it would be Steny Hoyer and well, you.
Yes. Steny Hoyer and I, we authored the Help America Vote Act. Ted Kennedy and Mitch McConnell. Can you imagine that combination today, something like that, in the Senate?
That was a different world.
And it was a complicated election bill. Jimmy Carter called it, next to civil rights, one of the greatest rights bills and movements, because he and Carter and Ford, put together the Ford Commission with Baker that we took the information off of it. I mean, it was just a perfect way to do it. Now, one of the things that we agreed on was there would be a felony attestation. So everybody in the country, this is a mandate, everybody in the country, when you sign this form, you are automatically attesting, it's an attestation, that you are a citizen of the United States. So Democrat and Republican board members who say, wait a minute, I think that person is clearly not a citizen, have a legal way to pursue it, whether it's, you know, 30 people, one person, Ohio, I don't know if they had one or something, but it's already there. So today is a, what do I want to call it? A look what we did vote. Yeah, it's reaffirming Steny and I. How about that? They should call it the reaffirmation vote for the Help America Vote Act.
No, but, you know, as I look at this, you know, you go, well, you have to get a government ID. You have to have a, you know, a passport, a military ID. And, you know, I thought, you know, I seem to remember there were people, especially on the Republican side, who were opposed to national ID cards or any of that kind of centralized databasing. But, you know, the thing that is, if this were to pass, and I don't think it's got a chance of actually becoming law because it's already illegal. But what I would find really interesting is when that red hat guy shows up and they go, well, we need your passport or we need your birth certificate, and they can't find it.
Well, we left the IDs up to the states, Steny and I did. Now, what we did, we mandated certain things, provisional voting so that people aren't turned away from the polls. You know, you're not told, no, you don't live here. You've got to go away, whether it's because of your sex or your race or your political affiliation. And we mandated the attestation. Some of it, though, we mandated the last four of your Social Security or some form of proof like a bank statement or something showing your address. But we left it loose for the states, you know, on the ID end of it. This would federalize, you know, IDs. So that was something way back when that we all agreed we weren't going to do, you know. And I don't think much of the attitude has changed. I don't think you'll get a federalized, quote, ID system out there. But again, there is an attestation, yeah. And the point is everybody has to sign, and if you're illegal, then you'll pursue it. Now, let me give you the other scenario on this, Rick, too. I'm a Board of Elections person. Somebody, you know, produces an ID, and, oh, okay, they're a citizen. Well, you know, they could have manipulated something. They could add false papers. So it still is going to boil down to people, you know, thinking there's a reason that this person in particular may not be a citizen. It can be checked out and they have signed an attestation. So I don't see where the ID thing is going to do anything for the system whatsoever, except complicate it.
Yeah, but it makes people feel better. And here's the thing, I mean, this whole thing defies logic. If you are here in an undocumented status, if you are here illegally, I doubt you're going to show up to a government facility and give them your name and address. It defies logic to me.
And in general, they don't. And there have been some that have, but again, it's so small of an amount of people, because you're right. In general, people don't say, I think I'll go risk everything to go vote. And then there's some people that had a green card, thought they could vote. I mean, there's some of that too, that's out there.
See, in my experience from the people that I've talked to, the vast majority of this stuff that happens is people error. I thought I was able to. I got this green card. I'm in the process of getting my citizenship. I'm, you know, all of this stuff. That okay, we fixed that. But, you know, this just seems like a solution and looking for a problem.
Well, it's you know, it's sexy and spicy type of vote.
Is it?
Sure. People are going to be home. I'm stopping the illegals who are going to take over the United States tomorrow morning. Now, when this all came up, Steny and I had the same opinion. I can remember the quote. Call me old fashioned, but I think you ought to be a citizen of the United States to vote.
That I agree.
Our quote. And yeah, so I mean, I'm all for citizens only voting. And so we made the attestation. End of the story. If somebody believes that somebody is not legal, you've got a means today to do it. You've had it since 2002. Yeah, this is the press release vote where, because think about it, who's going to come back right now, and the media won't dig into it, back in locals, who's going to come back and say, look what you did, you're just doing this for show? Yeah, they're not going to do it. So this will be a newsletter or a
campaign literature.
Press release, right?
Yep, that's
yes,
all it is.
Yes, campaign literature.
That's all it is. Let's move along. I'm not sure if you saw this or not, but some senators have reached out to Merrick Garland over our attorney general, and they have sent him a letter saying, hey, we think you should look at that Clarence Thomas guy. Maybe appoint a special counsel to probe all of the trips that Thomas has taken. And in fact, you know, on one of the pages, page 14, actually, they point out that Thomas may have taken a trip to Russia, a yacht trip and a private helicopter flight to Putin's palace. What is our Supreme Court justice doing in Putin's palace?
Well, I mean, if he did that, he shouldn't have been there. But on top of it, all the other trips, the money. And look, I took a trip. I filed that trip. Wasn't the right amount of money, but I filed it. And I was born in Wheeling, West Virginia. Lived temporarily in Morgantown Federal Corrections in West Virginia. I'm not going to be buried in West Virginia. So, you know, I paid the penalty of the improper filing on the trip. And I'm looking at the Supreme Court, I'm thinking, why are they different than any of us that are in Congress, were in Congress, or anybody else about filings? Why should the Supreme Court be different? Just because they're the highest court in the land, why should they get a free ride? You know, Roberts didn't do anything about it. He looked into it. It just shouldn't happen. So I think it's very interesting for them to put the pressure, towards the attorney general to say what he thinks. What should it be looked at? I mean, otherwise, Supreme Court just does not have to follow any ethical guideline.
Now, I'm also sure you saw that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez introduced articles of impeachment against Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito because they failed to recuse themselves in cases that, well, you know, they've got friends in those areas.
Yeah. Well, if I was AOC's head staffer, I'd have said, hey, Thomas, yeah, leave Alito out of it because, the flag and his wife and blah, blah. I think Thomas is so full of ethical holes, and it's such an issue. Everything I've read, and I don't know anything about the Russia thing, but even prior to this, anything I've read takes your breath away. So I think focusing just on Thomas would have been better, but it's okay. You know, she's filed on both. That, again, brings attention to.
Yeah, I mean, wined and dined, flown all over the world, yachted across the world, had, a kid of, I guess a grandnephew or something, put through school, bought the parents' house and turned it into a museum. I need better friends.
I went on a golf trip. I need better friends.
Let's move along. Evidently, President Biden has sent a letter to Congress telling him he ain't going nowhere.
Well, yes. I mean, things are beginning to come apart at the seams. I think it's up to 10 House members, one senator, and, of course, George Clooney, which gets a lot of publicity. I thought the Biden campaign answer was horrible on Clooney, basically alluding that the president has more stamina than George Clooney because Clooney left early and the president stayed 3 hours. President had a very adamant letter. I'm here. This is why I'm here. Now, some of the campaign's statements, too, are starting to become troubling because as they answered, these are Democrat elitists that want the president to leave. One better be very, very careful about that.
Yeah. No, you're dividing the party.
Yeah, very careful about that. I know Trump talks about elitists if anybody's against him, but this is a different ball game because everything's focused right now on the president. I will tell you this, whatever they're going to do, they need to do it now by the time, your show ends. They need to wrap this up. When I say they, president, powers to be, the Democratic Party, on two aspects by Sunday night. The president is staying or he isn't. Now, I know the president says, I'm staying. He wrote the letter. But that's because the president has to be debating it now, but he can't come out and show any sign of weakness, because then the media goes nuts. If he would say, for example, I'm staying, but I'm going to talk to Joe Biden tonight and my family about it, boom,
that opens the door. The
media goes crazy. So, but if the president, and again, I'm serious, this weekend, they can't be waiting another, you know, 10 days. If the president is staying, he's staying. And you circle the wagons and you go for it. If the president is leaving, though, if there's not an agreed to exit strategy, you can't be having a couple of the senators say, well, let's pick a new person this way. Somebody else says, well, let's have a mini convention. I saw where they said Oprah Winfrey and some other people ought to have a series of candidates debate in front of them. I mean, if one thing's for sure, if the president leaves, this needs to be absolutely lockstep. Here's our candidates. We go for it. We're going to go into the convention.
No, I think if the president is going to step aside, it's got to be this weekend before the RNC convention, because that news will completely suck the air out of the RNC's little song and dance. And you know, I had a guest this week say, look, you know, if he were to, you know, step down entirely, hand the presidency off to Kamala, so that people get used to having her as president. She runs as an incumbent. You know, that may be a way to go as well. I know some people are pushing that. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think that before the convention, an announcement has to be made.
You know, if that did happen, because, you know, Kamala Harris can be debatable in the polls, but if that did happen and he actually handed the presidency to her, that's an entirely different press ball game, entirely, from there till the end of the election. That would be quite incredible.
Now he gets to be Uncle Joe. He gets to say, look, I did what I came to do. I saved democracy. I passed all this great stuff. This is my legacy. And they could run on that, going, look, he can go around doing rallies and all kinds of stuff and then pass that torch. I was always going to be the conduit to the future. There's so many great ways to pass this along that would give him, historically, I think would be an incredible legacy. But I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Yes, and it would also make him a hero within the Democratic Party, because as he says, he wants to save democracy. Well, if he believes in his heart of heart that Donald Trump is going to destroy the democracy of the country, if he believes that, then you're right. He could spin that so many true ways of saying, look, I don't like this. I think I could have done okay, but I understand where this is headed, and I'm going to hand it off. But within the Democratic Party, he would be a hero, because if he stays and everything goes in a really bad direction, House, Senate, et cetera, then he's going to go down as the guy that, you know, took the party down in a tsunami.
No, he was the guy who transitioned us into fascism. That will be the legacy.
So, yes, you're right. There are 1,000 ways to spin it. And you know the other thing that could be done? Look, I'm thinking, you're a political guy, I am. You know, the exit, have some accolades to him, you know, some events. There could be a lot done with it.
There could be an awful lot done with it. And it would be a lot of positive press. And you could, going into the campaign, actually steal a couple of news cycles, which Democrats don't do well. Right. But, you know, we'll see. Again, we'll see. But, you know, the fact that we're concerned about saving democracy, and I know you know about Project 2025. We've been talking about it on this show for just about a year now, because right when it came out, we jumped all over it. Nobody seemed to think it was important. Now it's all the rage because, maybe we shouldn't put the president in charge of the FBI or the Justice Department. You know, maybe that's a bad idea. But, you know, Donald Trump came out and he completely distanced himself from it. Why do you think he did that?
Well, you know, you talked about 2025. Another station I do, somebody called in about it, and that's how they talked about it. But, yeah, you know, you were ahead of the curve, and people talked about it a little bit, and it got buried. But 1972, the Heritage Foundation came into being. Ronald Reagan became the president, and Heritage, you know, excelled. And of course, Heritage Foundation, this think tank, is about developing 2025 because it's an integral part of 2025. 2025 not only goes into completely redoing civil service to declassify jobs and basically make them all presidential appointments, which I love to see the court actions on that one with civil service. But on top of it, it has language in there for Christian nationalism, you know, to mandate basically a quote Christian country, which of course there's this little thing in the Constitution called separation of church and state, separation of powers and church and state. But in beginning, you know, first of all, ideas were signed off and fed through the conservatives and the Trump campaign. Once I think Trump's top campaign people realized that, what do you want to have any controversy like this for as it erupts, especially after January the 6th, especially after all the losses with the election fraud, Giuliani, et cetera, and especially after the White House making the mantra about democracy and authoritarian government, the last thing you want is to have been part of a document that has, you know, the ability to basically hire and fire everybody at the whim of a president only in the entire federal system, and to deem this will be a Christian nationalist run country. So yes, I think Trump even said he never saw it or something.
I find that to be BS. I think, yeah. You know, as I think I've read this somewhere before, that the whole reason he came out against it is the perception that he's not in charge, that he would have to share power or something. And it makes almost no sense, because it gives him absolute control to hire and fire. It weaponizes government in ways that even Jim Jordan couldn't fathom.
Yeah, and I think his campaign is at this point is like, look what's going on with the Republican platform.
Yeah.
Look at that. You know, they're now diluting, quote, the abortion issue in some people's eyes. You know, I don't think so, but in some people's eyes they are. So it's very interesting. They're trying to, for the first time in the last couple of years, calm things down a little bit, to take the, you know, controversial side of this or that out.
That won't lull stop people to sleep. False sense of security before they give them the good jab. I hear you. I hear you. Bob, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the day that the American Indian Movement began at a meeting in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A group of 200 Native Americans gathered together to discuss a response to the U.S. government's history of broken treaties and the devastating consequences on Native peoples. The statistics of unyielding poverty and high unemployment in Native communities were staggering. By 1970, 40% of the Native population lived in poverty. The unemployment rate was 10 times the national average. Life expectancy was only 44 years old. In the early 1970s, activists staged a series of occupations at Alcatraz, Wounded Knee, and at Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore is built on a site in the Black Hills that is sacred to the Ocheti Sakowin, or the Great Sioux Nation. The United States government promised Native rights to the land in a treaty that was broken when gold was discovered. In 1972, activists staged a Trail of Broken Treaties caravan, which ended in a six-day occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Washington, D.C. They issued a statement that read, quote, "We seek a new American majority, a majority that is not content merely to confirm itself by superiority of numbers, but which conscience is committed toward prevailing upon the public will in ceasing wrongs and doing right." Beginning in the 1970s, the United States government began to respond to Native people's demands. A series of federal acts gave Native communities more control over their education and improving their health care. Lawsuits brought by tribes resulted in further economic autonomy. Yet by 2014, one in four Native people still lived in poverty.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So I saw this thing over on the Twitters. Evidently, Twitter is, or X, or you know, Elon Musk's little toy. Evidently, they're testing a dislike button. And I'm not quite sure what, you know, with all of the things behind it, I gotta assume that the more people who dislike it, the further down it goes, and the fewer people who see it. Now, the weird thing is the algorithm is so boogered up that most times, unless you pay Elon Musk, unless you pay for the blue check, they throttle what people see of yours anyway. But the dislike button could probably just completely silence people entirely, which might be a reason to follow Elon Musk. Because it seems like he's turned, it's right-wing propaganda all the time. And let's finish up on some interesting news. As you know, the Biden folks are pitching the idea of taking on junk fees, you know, going after how much they screw you over on ticket prices, how banks, if you happen to be a penny short in your account, give you a good jab of an overdraft fee, sometimes you know, like 30, 35 bucks. And it's one of those things where they're charging you more of what they know you don't have. But according to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's proposed new rule, they would be capping that overdraft fee at just $8, because that's what they're saying it costs. Because they get their money anyway. It's just this incentive, this extra thing that they tack on to fatten their bottom line. And you go, well, if it only costs $8, why do they charge 30? Where's that other 22, 24, 26? Where's that other money go? Well, I think we know where it goes. It goes into their pockets. It's how they, well, it's how they give themselves lavish salaries and all of that. And what I found interesting is the Wall Street Journal did a bit with this Mariana Lake. She's the head of Chase's, she's the head of their marketing department, I believe, of their Chase Bank. And she said they're going to have to get it from other people. They're not losing their profit. And look, as I was searching the inner tubes for what do Americans spend every year on overdraft fees, I found numbers ranging from about $8 billion up to $17 billion a year. Pure profit for the big banks. Now, me, I go to a credit union, and they don't charge you that high fee. In fact, they generally give you, you know, a little bit of forgiveness, or they, you know, they'll pay it and then say, hey, you know, chuck it in here. A much different experience. Or, you know, they just take it from your savings account if you have one. There's a lot of ways to ensure that you don't get. Now, I know what people say. Well, if you don't have the money, you shouldn't overdraft. Sometimes people make mistakes. Some people, there are errors in math. Sometimes a direct withdrawal comes out you weren't expecting. There are times when this stuff happens. And it seems to happen a lot to people who don't have money. You know, poor and working class people who are living paycheck to paycheck. So every couple of weeks, if something happens and you get dinged with a non-sufficient fund bill, it's going to cost you 34, 35. I think I saw one that was almost 50, someone was saying. It's a lot. And by taking this on, I think the Biden folks have shown a little bit of, hey, you know, we kind of care about you working folks. We want to make the playing field a little bit more level. And it's something I think is kind of important. It's just another one of those little things. Now, look, there's a lot of big things we should be doing without question. But it's one of those little things that makes you go, yeah, this is why we should be voting for people who care about working folks. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Something on your mind, something I said made you think, made you angry. I want to hear about it. Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Also, check out freespeech.org for our videos. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
Rick at Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.